Where did most of the limestone to build the houses in the south of England come from? We find out somewhere near Lyme Regis, believe it or not. We speak to John Scott from the Beer Quarry Caves. That is just, like I say, near Lyme Regis and Devon and the Dorset border. And we start this week by plunging down the caves of Beer Quarry Caves, which is where much of this limestone was dug out. And we hear that this quarry was very nearly blasted and locked up forever.
My name's John Scott, and for many years I've been involved with the preservation of the underground workings now known as Beer Quarry Caves. Over a period of almost 2,000 years, generations of local families, even young children, are living here quarrying beer stone. Now, it's a type of limestone, but it can't be found anywhere else in the world. It's ideal for stonemasons carving very fine details, but in the outside world dries a creamy white colour and becomes up to five times harder.
Ah, because this is the trouble with limestone, is it can be quite crumbly, can't it? That's not all that good for building a cathedral or something.
Yes, well, beer stone, the seam, was actually discovered by the Romans in the 1st century, buried here beneath 200 feet of solid rock, so it's impossible to reach by digging from the surface. But throughout the centuries that followed, generations of local families, even young children, earned their livings here deep below ground in appalling conditions.
Okay, how young? That sounds pretty horrifying.
Well, I grew up in Beer next door to an old lady who'd actually worked here when she was only 8 years old. 70 years after they passed a law to say no one under 14 must work underground. So they were still employing 8-year-old children. Now, when the Romans came, they made the entrance that we walked through just now. You can tell they were great architects because here they supported the roof with arches like a Roman building when they were quarrying beer stone to build their villas. Well, the quarry was then worked continuously until 1920. So today, you can see beer stone in Westminster Abbey, Tower of London, Hampton Court, Windsor Castle, and 24 cathedrals throughout the country. The sad thing is, when thousands of people like us visit those buildings, we can admire all the carvings done by stonemasons long ago, but how many ever stop to wonder where the stone they used actually came from? So it all started, as I say, in the 1st century with the Romans making the entrance, but then, of course, the Saxons came here, and then the Normans quarrying beer stone created a huge industry, employing over 600 people below ground all those years ago. Well, for almost 700 years, the quarry was owned by the bishops of Exeter. Because they needed such a massive workforce, here the bishops employed quarrymen, stonemasons, carters, wagon builders, wheelwrights, blacksmiths, harness makers. The incredible thing is, accounts that were kept at the cathedral of that work have survived. So you can still find the names of people who worked here centuries ago. The wages overpaid, the cost of sharpening tools, delivering stone, even feeding the horses are recorded every week. So they tell an incredible story.
They certainly sound like they do, but what's the extent of the cave network then? It sounds like there's been quite a lot of quarrying going on here. They must have made quite a lot of tunnels.
Well, in actual fact, it's the largest underground workings in the south of England. And here below ground, without machinery, they left us with 75 acres of underground space, cut out a solid stone 20 feet high just by hand. But you've got to remember, the stone was transported from here hundreds of miles on horse-drawn wagons and barges, as it's held from Beer Beach back then. The smallest blocks weighed 4 tonnes.
Now, I can remember from working in Salisbury that the restoration of the Salisbury Cathedral, they actually went back to Chilmark, which was where they got the original stone from. So is there still a demand for your quarried limestone here for restoring buildings that were built originally from it hundreds of years ago?
There is a huge demand still for beer stone for restoration. Now, the sad thing is, although this quarry stopped work in 1920, it never ran out of stone. It was so far to take horse-drawn wagons underground to the deepest working face at that time, they moved underground the opposite side of the road. Now, at the moment, that's going through a change of ownership, which means no beer stone is being quarried. But we've just had special permission to come down here and quarry some stone for the restoration of Exeter. But the records are so good, we can go to the exact place they got the original in 1326. So that's how good the records are.
Okay, and also give us an idea of some of the maybe local buildings, because I would imagine some of the stone wasn't just used in these enormous, you know, church buildings, etc., that maybe some of the local cottages were built from them.
Yes, the thing is, there are only 7 buildings in the whole parish of Beer where you see good beer stone. Most of them are made from an inferior type of limestone, discovered near the surface, and that's why those buildings are badly decayed in the weather. But because the qualities of beer stone meant it was used for very high prestige buildings, that kept the price of it up, far too much for a normal local person to afford to build a house out of it.
Now, there's also been a complete, I suppose, depression in mining generally. I mean, obviously, this is a quarry. It's not quite the same. And obviously, this place is no longer actually quarrying stone. So why is it that, you know, for centuries up until this present century and maybe the last century, these were very active places, and the mines were too, and now everything seems to have slowed down? The tin mines I'm thinking of, for example, in Cornwall, even though it's supposed to be such a rich source of the metal, one of the richest on, didn't it even give Britain its name? I'm not sure about that fact, but anyway, how come these aren't so active as they've been in previous centuries?
A lot of the problem, I think, is importing stone from places like France and Italy. I think the classic example was some years ago when they restored the British Museum and used a certain French stone, which will remain nameless. And, anybody who looks at the front of the British Museum today and see that stone's badly decayed realise they made a big mistake. Because you can see beer stone in Roman villas, almost 2,000 years old, that's perfect. So we know it will survive that long. But it had to be put into a building the same way round as it was quarried, because there's a grain, like a piece of wood, as it was formed on the seabed. So down here, they'd always have a man called the tallyman. And he'd have a pot of red paint, a brush and a ruler, and when a wagon brought stone up in the working phase, he'd stop the horses, measure the size of the block, write a number on it in red saying how many cubic feet it is. That works out a coinman's wages, and what the stone can be sold for. But because the stone's got this grain like a piece of wood, the tallyman would simply draw a vertical arrow in red telling the mason this way up in the building. So providing it was laid in the building in the same plane it was quarried, we know the stone will survive for 2,000 years.
Now, I bet you look at some of our modern buildings and you think, gosh, if only they were being built out of some decent stone. Because I look at some of them, you know, a lot of them are just simply breeze blocks with a little bit of stone facing on them.
Well, yeah, stone has become a skin over the years because of the cost. But I think the classic example of what you're saying is that if you think of our ancestors using beer stone in Westminster Abbey, the Tower of London and St Paul's Cathedral, now those three buildings have already stood for a total between them of more than 2,000 years. But the classic is about 20 years ago, a team of experts confidently said that a building designed by computer, built with the aid of machinery and using the finest modern materials, would attract more visitors than any other historic building in the country. Of course, within 12 months of its completion, it was thanks to a lack of visitors, what we knew at the time as the Millennium Dome was forced to close its doors to the public. So it was horses for courses, and every cathedral is a mixture of different types of stone. But you'll never find a cathedral built of one particular type. But like I say, you'll find beer stone today in 24 cathedrals. But because of the price and imports over the years, that the competition has meant that stone literally has become a skin. They build with breeze blocks or whatever and just effacing. This section where the quarry is square was done by the Saxons. If you go to the Norman part, where they took over, all the pillars are upright with capitals at the top, just like a Norman building. So underground, you've got the changing styles of architecture throughout the centuries. There is no one survey map shows the true size of the quarry. And that's because throughout the years, quarry owners having to pay a tax on the amount of beer stone they sold produced maps to show the quarry smaller than it was, and Dodd's a tax man. So there's nothing new. Well, actually now we're in the Norman section, and they quarried stone here for 24 cathedrals we can see today. But when you realise that was thousands of tons, back then the Normans didn't have hand saws to work with. Here, they cut out almost 20 acres of space, and yet every mark we see now was a single blow of a Norman pickaxe back then. Do you know, they even discovered all those years ago if a crack should appear in the roof. They get one of the children to climb up.
Like that one.
Yep, like that one above our head. They get one of the children to climb up and force a ball of red clay into it. And the Normans had worked out here where the temperature never changes, the clay wouldn't shrink. And the only reason for it to fall out would tell them the crack was opening and becoming dangerous. And of course, all engineers do now is glue telltale strips of glass over cracks instead. And you also find that the Normans got children to take the clay outside mould it the shape of a pudding basin and bake it hard in the sun. So when they stuck a tallow candle on the rim, that's how the Normans made the very first safety helmets with lights on the front as well. We just don't give them credit for how clever they were. For years I'd been interested in the quarry, even when I was a kid. I used to take people around here out of interest sake. And then, knowing that there's 2,000 years of history down here, and we're still finding things to this day, some years ago it was saved from the quarry company by 2 hours because they were about to blast the whole place flat. So that would have meant losing 2,000 years of our heritage.
Well, that's right. And also, of course, you were mentioning earlier that there's actually quite a lot of memories, community memories, in the surrounding area, Beer Village, of the town, of what happened here. So that would start to die as well if there's not some kind of attraction or some kind. So yeah, how did that happen? 2 hours from blowing up the entrance and really maybe burying it forever.
Well, it was very fortunate that some weeks earlier I'd taken Lord Clinton of Clinton Devon Estates, the local landowner, around the quarry. He owned the place, of course, didn't really know the history entailed. And he agreed with me at the time the place would never be lost. Well, of course, a few weeks later we hear the quarry company were going to blast it. So, thanks to Lord Clinton's help, we were able to obtain a lease on the place, stop that happening, and since then we've managed to keep it open to the public.
What about those that you've spoken to in the local area? What memories are there of this place? You mentioned one, but that can't be the only one.
In some ways, jealousy still exists in Beer between descendants of quarrymen and stonemasons.
So what's the difference?
Well, the stonemasons did all the carving of the blocks that the quarrymen worked, or produced. But the thing is, they couldn't transport beer stone to a cathedral in winter, because it comes from underground saturated with water. If you took it on a long winter's journey, it would be cracked by frost on the way, useless for carving. So every winter the stonemasons travelled here from all over England. They can carve the stone per cathedral underground here, because the temperature never changes. But they caused jealousy in the village, in some ways still exists. You see, back then the stonemasons came into Beer Village, a small community. They're skilled men, they're highly paid. But learning all their trade secrets from their father or paying for an apprenticeship that would cost one of us a whole year's wages meant no one from the village could ever become a highly paid mason. Well, of course, once they finished their apprenticeship, every stonemason had to swear an oath he'd never reveal his trade secrets, and then he was free to move round from job to job, and hence we've got the Freemasons.
So what is the link between the modern Freemasons? Because, very few of those, if any, or maybe one or two, are actually really stonemasons nowadays.
No, somebody from any trade now can become a Freemason if they're accepted into the guild, obviously. Of course, back then, the Freemasons knew the secrets of geometry way back in the 11th century and things like this. They could work out how far the pillars had to be apart to take the thrust of a roof and things like this. So this has led to some of the modern-day symbolism of the modern-day Freemasonry. But the strange thing is, one of the secrets Freemasons kept for centuries was a gadget called a Lewis. It was dovetail in shape, made up of three pieces of iron, held together with a bolt. Well, to lift a 4-ton block of beer stone, you cut a hole in the top the same size and shape as the Lewis, which, of course, is wider at the bottom than it is at the top. Well, the Lewis wouldn't go in, but the secret was to remove the bolt. But when the Lewis falls in three pieces, you take the straight one out the middle, stick it on one side, drop the two tapered pieces of it into the narrow neck of the hole. And when they reach the bottom where the hole was wider, they come apart. So slide in the straight one down between and put in the bolt back. The bottom of the Lewis now too wide to pull back out the top of the hole. And that's how they lifted the blocks. Well, they were used by the Romans building Hadrian's Wall and still used today. And because the Lewis took the weight of stone for Freemasons throughout all that time is why now a Freemason's son is known as a Lewis, but supposed to take the weight off his father instead. In fact, anyone in this country with the surname of Lewis will probably find they're descended from a Freemason, knowing long ago if he revealed any secrets, he'd have been so severely punished that he'd never work again. Because it was by keeping their secrets, the Masons could always demand the highest wages.
Well, it'd be nice for people today if they were able to get those wages too. And you can see why there might be the jealousies, especially with the secrecy, the exclusivity. Does this have any lessons for us today, do you think?
Well, today, of course, the jealousy has become almost good-natured. It becomes banter now. But there is another jealousy that lives on in Beer Village because it's still a small community. And it came from the days when the quarry was used for hiding contraband. The whole village was involved with smuggling, you see. It was the ideal place. No customs man would search down here. He knows he could get lost in all these tunnels or he'd get bumped off in the dark and nobody find out. That's why we're still finding things left by the smugglers.
What have you found that's been left by smugglers centuries ago?
We dug out remains of French brandy barrels. Everybody knows they smuggled brandy. One day we were puzzled digging out two French soap boxes. But an expert explained there was a time there was so much tax just on good soap for the lady and the man, and members of the prison sentence smuggling that ashore to sell it and get money for the family. One day we took a lad of 14 to a part the public never see. Showed him where his family wrote their names quarrying beer stone 250 years ago. Of course he was thrilled to bits. He turned round, tripped over. It was just an old bundle of oilskin. And we very nearly booted it in the corner. Luckily, when we sent it to the museum, they unwrapped the oilskin that had laid down here over 200 years, and in this atmosphere, beautiful pieces of silks have actually survived all that time. So there's stacks of evidence they were using the place to hide contraband. But when I said there's still jealousy in beer, not only between the descendants of quarrymen and stonemasons, but it comes from the days when everybody in the village hated the customs men. But what it means for me after all this time is I can walk in a local pub crowded with visitors, but within minutes I'll have the fishermen telling them that years ago their ancestors were smugglers, and one of mine was the local blasted customs officer, so they're still reminding me to this very day. We're open every day to the public from the Monday before Easter Monday till the end of October. There's guided tours every single day throughout that period. Website is www.beerquarrycaves.co.uk, and you know, we hope over the years we can increase the number of visitors, because without the visitors, it's strange to think that this place supplied stone for so many historic buildings, and about 90% of our historic buildings have to depend on the number of visitors they receive to provide the funds for future preservation. And, of course, the quarry that provided that stone is exactly the same. Without the visitors, the whole place would be lost. But when you think down here now, we're still digging out tools that we used centuries ago. A horseshoe, which we've been told is one of the oldest ever found in England, dating from the early 11th century. Just inside the entrance, we've unearthed 41 1st to 4th century Roman coins. It's quite a thrill when you pick up something no one else has touched for all that time. And then just before we opened at Easter this year, we were having torrential rain running in the slope where we came in the Roman entrance. Well, it doesn't matter. The place is self-draining and it can't flood. But I told my grandson, he's only 14, to get a pickaxe and drag a little groove across the chalk floor to divert the water. 2 minutes later, he had a 3.5-inch long bronze Roman bow brooch to hold a cloak together. And the incredible thing is the spring still works after all this time. So when you think there's chambers down here where no one set foot for hundreds of years, hidden by waste, how much more history is there to find?
And also they do a very good cup of tea and a nice piece of cake up at the cafe after.
But the funny thing is, you know, we very often get people right on the sites, you know, for visiting places. I won't mention the name of the site, obviously, but you know, we very often say, and after the tour, make sure you have a cream tea. It's the best in the area. So my daughter's quite proud of that.
And that was John Scott from Beer Quarry Caves down near Lyme Regis.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.